Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast series presented by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This series connects people affected by blood cancers to their community with stories of hope, healing, and help.
Hi, I'm George Athens, the host for this podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Dawn Mays. She works with the Division of Medical Oncology and Hematology at the Princess Margaret Cancer Center in Toronto. Welcome, Dr. Mays. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can we start with a little bit of background on your, let's say, chosen field, why you got into it, and what specifically you deal with on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, for sure. So when I finished up my hematology training, it was just around the time of the approval of the first JAK inhibitor, ruxolitinib. And I think prior to that, our treatment options for MPNs and for myelofibrosis in particular were really quite limited. And it was around that time that I think our understanding of the pathobiology started to deepen, and we started to have a treatment option, really. So, you know, I think it started with ruxolitinib, and the field has really continued to progress since then. So it was an exciting time back then when I was just starting my fellowship training, and it continues to be a very exciting time. So day to day, I work in the MPN program at Princess Margaret, and I see a whole variety of MPNs. So I think we see a lot of myelofibrosis, but we also see patients with polycythemia vera and essential thrombocythemia. And then other, you know, those are the typical ones, but there are others, and there are overlap syndromes as well. So we see a variety of things.
Can you kind of, in layman's language, tell us what MPNs are exactly?
Yeah, of course. So MPNs, or myeloproliferative neoplasms, are a group of blood cancers where there's overproduction of one or more types of blood cells. So, you know, our blood cells are made in the bone marrow. They start as stem cells, and then they grow and change into different types of mature blood cells. And then they're released from the bone marrow out into the blood. So in MPNs, a change in a blood stem cell causes the bone marrow to overproduce or make too many of one or more types of those blood cells.
So the application of your knowledge and your education, does it touch on research at all, or is it more with patient care?
So I think it's both. So I think our group, in terms of patient care, we see patients from mainly the Greater Toronto Area, but indeed across Ontario, for second opinions, some directly from family doctors, but a lot of our referrals would be from hematologists. So often seeking a second opinion. And many of those patients are being referred for consideration for clinical trials, so either a second opinion and maybe diagnostic difficulty, or there are no standard of care treatment options that are available. So the patients are coming again to be reviewed and to consider their eligibility for trials.
Is there a certain demographic, if you will, as to who might be impacted by MPNs, a certain age, a certain sex, a certain ethnicity?
That's an interesting question. So, MPNs typically affect people in their 60s and 70s. That's the most common age of diagnosis. But I think that there's an increasing recognition that young people can be diagnosed with MPNs. And I know that's a particular area of interest for me in my research. So we know that approximately 20% of patients with MPNs are diagnosed below the age of 40. And those people have unique needs as they're going to have the disease. These are chronic illnesses. They're going to have the disease for many, many years and decades in some cases. And that poses specific challenges around choosing appropriate treatment. And for some cases, for young women who are interested in potentially in a potential pregnancy in the future. So that's something else that that certainly impacts our choice of treatment. So, so there's an increasing recognition, again, of that younger cohort. But, the bulk of the patients that we see, the most common would be patients, again, in their 60s and 70s. But it affects people of all ages and all genders.
What would you tell somebody that was recently diagnosed with MPN? What are the kinds of things that they should know?
So I'll try to answer that question in general terms, but I think it really does depend on the specific MPN. So, I think one of the most important things when someone is diagnosed is to understand the diagnosis. I think these are uncommon diagnoses, and sometimes they may be very new to patients. So I think it's very important to discuss with the team to have a good understanding of the diagnosis. And then very importantly, the goals of therapy. So in polycythemia vera and essential thrombocythemia, so PV and ET, we really talk to patients about acute complications. So that would be primarily blood clotting complications. And then we also talk about long-term complications, and that can be progression to myelofibrosis, where there's scarring in the bone marrow, or evolution to acute leukemia. In myelofibrosis, that's so in MF, that there's already scarring in the bone marrow. And that's a condition that can be associated with disease-related symptoms like fevers, sweats, change in appetite, loss of weight. It can be associated with a big spleen or low blood counts. So I think, it's important, the discussions and the treatment goals really change depending on the individual MPN. And it's really important to have a clear discussion with the doctor and the treating team to understand what the goals of treatment are. Are we doing this treatment because we want to reduce your risk of blood clots? Because we want to delay progression, because we want to shrink your spleen, we want to try and improve your blood counts. So I think the goals of therapy can differ. And we know from research in this area that there's often a disconnect between patients and their doctors about what the actual goals of therapy are. So I think that's one of the most important things to establish at the outset.
So there are lots of treatment options then, and this is a dialogue that has to happen between the doctor and his or the medical care team and the patient. Is the research on MPM progressing? What does the future hold for those diagnosed with this type of blood cancer?
Yeah, so I think, as I started out, I think this is a very exciting time for MPN. So a decade ago, there was very little, particularly for myelofibrosis, and there's been a lot of developments in this area. So, we have, I guess, a couple of areas to highlight. We started with ruxolitinib about 10 years ago. That belongs to a class of drugs called JAK inhibitors. So that field is really evolving. So there are new JAK inhibitors. Patients who previously weren't eligible for that therapy because of low platelets or anemia, now there are new agents that are specifically tailored for patients who have low blood counts. So there are new JAK inhibitors. There are also combinations. So starting with a JAK inhibitor backbone, so that's really a mainstay of therapy in myelofibrosis for the last 10 years or so. And adding new agents. So starting with the JAK inhibitor and adding a second, so combination therapy to try and, you know, improve anemia or, you know, or other clinical problems in MPNs. In the polycythemia vera and essential thrombocythemia space, there's a lot of new interest in interferon and related drugs. So this is an old drug that really fell out of favor, but there's renewed interest in that drug, potentially even early in the disease course to treat disease-related symptoms, to help control blood counts, and maybe even to affect the JAK2 allele burden, which is basically the level of JAK2 that's found in the bone marrow or blood. I think that's another area, you know, and I think finally we have a better understanding overall of what causes these diagnoses and what contributes to progression. You know, we're starting to understand genetic changes that that result in progression in some patients, you know, whereas other patients might remain very, very stable and have a chronic and fairly indolent kind of disease course for years or decades. So lots happening.
It sounds amazing, all this evolving technology and medical advancements. Aside from, let's say, the purely medical side of it, how important is it for patients to have a positive attitude?
Yeah, so I think that's a good point, because I think it's hugely important. These diseases are chronic. You know, it's often, very difficult when people get a diagnosis of an MPN or any cancer indeed. But, you know, I think it's important that people realize that cancers are not all the same. You know, there are very aggressive cancers. There are slow growing cancers that people live with. There are cancers that require treatment up front, others that you watch and you monitor. So, you know, I think that it's a very important aspect that, you know, that people maintain a positive attitude. And if they are struggling with the diagnosis or, you know, or the management plan, that they seek out the help they need, because this is something that many people will be living with, you know, for many years.
Finally, I'd just like to ask you, what it's like to be a doctor working in this specific field. It must be tough at times, but it also must be very rewarding to know that you're helping others.
Yeah, you know, I think that's exactly it. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think there are times when it's very challenging. We have, we see sad cases. We see cases where we don't have therapies to offer. But on the other hand, you know, we definitely have our successes to go along with that. So, you know, there are patients that we've seen in our clinic that have been with me since the start of my practice. So we have long-term relationships with those patients, and we've seen them go through some important life milestones, you know, kids getting married, babies in the family. So, you know, and yes, there are some times when someone will have a success on a therapy or really have a wonderful benefit from a clinical trial that we may not have been expecting. It's absolutely very rewarding.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and continued success. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. You're very well-spoken and I'm sure a great asset to your hospital. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
If listeners have any questions about this podcast or need any support or resources to navigate your experience, I encourage you to connect with the community service manager in your region. For more information, visit bloodcancers.ca. If you liked our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts. We also welcome any ideas for our program, so we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your suggestions or comments at info@bloodcancers.ca. Until next time, stay well and stay connected.
Thank you for listening to The Blood Cancer Experience, a series of podcasts presented by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. We are committed to supporting the blood cancer community through programs, services, and research.